This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are with Mike O'Neill from O'Neill Property Management in Riverside. He's been in the business for many years, but not only as a manager, but also as a property owner and investor. So, Mike, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here, Phil.
The investment side of real estate, when did that catch your interest? When did you start thinking about, I'm going to be a buyer of these types of properties?
17 years old.
17 years old. I mean, I only know two other people that had that in their mind. That's really early. So why was that even on your mind at 17?
I always liked real estate. Even when I was in high school, when I was a senior in high school, my older brother and I bought our first rental together. I had worked pretty much full time throughout most of my high school, so I had saved some money up, and he had some money, and we went together and we bought one, and I actually ended up buying three or four with him and before I headed on my own, and most of those three or four happened through high school and college.
Okay. I mean, did you have anybody in your world as far as a friend or other people that started doing things that early?
No, I don't think so. I think that they had other things on their mind at high school.
Yeah. Well, even the college that you went to, what college did you choose and why did you choose that college?
Riverside City College for 2 years so I could get my grades in order and get myself into being what I wanted, the student I wanted to be, and then Cal Poly Pomona for my last 2 years.
But you chose Cal Poly because of?
It had a very good business program that geared itself more entrepreneurial and small business. Now, there's a lot of that out there now, but there wasn't a lot of that out there in the 70s. So it was a unique place. Most of your professors were actually people that were in the business world, and I learned a lot from those people.
Okay. What was your mindset when you were buying properties? Were you really interested in keeping them from the start, or were you interested in the, I think I can flip it and make a chunk of money?
Well, I wanted income from them is what I was interested in the beginning. So the first couple of properties I bought were multiple units, and I was and they did create some income, so it was a good thing. It helped. Because I did borrow some money, borrowed part of the down payment for the first one from my grandmother, and I needed to have the money to pay that back. So I looked more towards income in the beginning, but I wasn't really looking that far out initially as far as selling, and I just wanted them to perform well and continue developing them and raising rents when I could, and making them into better condition.
Okay. So you, in any time in your career, were you in the buy-sell business predominantly, or was it mostly...
You mean as an investor?
Yeah, as an investor where you're buying, let's say, wholesale to sell at retail.
I have sold 2 investment properties in my whole life. Everything else I've bought, I've held.
Okay.
So I guess I wouldn't be a good buy-sell. I might be a good buy guy to talk to, but not a good guy to talk to about selling.
No, though that's not uncommon. So you're either wearing one hat or the other. See, I did not do that. And much to my detriment for a while, I did not hold properties. I thought it was pretty great to be able to find something below market and turn it into a chunk of money. I call it chunk money. That excited me. And it really wasn't until a guy I really respected said, "What would happen to your family if you got hurt?" And I really thought about that one time he said it. Maybe he said it to me 10 times, but I did think about it one time. And I realized that I am really not, whenever he made that statement, I was not prepared to survive monthly on any cash flow that was going to be continuous. And it put the bug in my ear to say, okay, I'm going to solve that. So Yeah, I regret not thinking about that earlier because, you know, when you were involved in this stuff and I was involved with it, we were buying things at times, you know, you'd have downturns where you could be buying houses for $30,000 or $50,000.
Oh, yeah.
And to keep that stuff, yeah, that would be that would have been pretty amazing. So, yeah, you definitely landed on the right square, no doubt about that. Would you say that most of the properties that you've purchased to hold have been bought at a significant discount, or that wasn't one of the criteria that really mattered to you?
Oh, that was a criteria
okay.
that mattered to me. And most of the time I bought most of my properties during down markets, recessions.
Okay.
Where I found, sometimes I bought outside of them, but they were a good deal. You know, the old axiom is you want to make the money when you buy it.
Right.
So if you get a little bit of equity in the beginning, it helps. It helps keep your payment down, helps with your cash flow. It helps with a lot of things. And then it's certainly when you want to sell, because, you know, the costs of sale are going to be there. So if you don't have significant equity, they're gonna eat up a good bit of your profit.
Has there been a repetitive source of deals? Did you talk directly to owners, or were most of the purchases done out of the MLS or auctions or what?
I didn't do any auctions, but MLS, direct discussions with owners, lenders, all kinds of things over the years. I don't know that there's one magic bullet on that.
Has the property management business sometimes just had an obvious situation where you would buy a property from somebody that you managed from?
I've done that on occasion. Typically, I try to stay away from that, but if an owner calls, I've had a few owners say, hey, I need to get rid of this property. I'm willing to sell it at this price. Are you interested? And if I was, I did. But you know, we don't want to be in any position where they consider it a conflict of interest. So I have to be very careful.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Ever have a seller carry back financing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There, in the older days, that was the way it was done most of the time. I mean, a lot of the times, especially when the interest rates were high on loans or difficult to obtain. We get owner carry backs, and they seem to work out well for both sides.
Okay. So if you're looking to pick up the next rental property, give me the type of property that you probably will pursue.
How? I've bought multiple units. I've bought houses. I think at this point, if I expand, I'd rather do it in houses. And I'd rather have something that's three or more bedrooms, two or more baths, two-car garage, front and back yard, by the way, an attached garage. Hopefully, in most cases, I want it to be built after the 50s, like from 1960 on. You have more modern construction techniques or less issues from that. So I don't want to buy a 100-year-old house. So that would be that's what I typically look at if I do decide I'm going to go out and buy. I want them to meet those parameters, and I find it, you know, not too big a house, by the way. I mean, why buy a 3,500 square foot house when a 2,000 square foot house is only going to rent for a few hundred dollars less?
Okay. What about yard size?
Hopefully not too big.
Yeah, it's funny. In Apple Valley, you know, everything's a half acre. And I found that there was an amazing amount of stuff somebody could find to put in a half acre. That's really not pleasant.
Those rural properties can be a handful. I mean, obviously, I don't want them to have anything in their backyard except maybe lawn furniture and chairs and a few things like that. I don't want them to have furniture back there and cars or any of those kind of things you find in the rural areas. And we're kind of tight on that within my company, and I'm very tight on that within the properties that I own.
Have you noticed more challenges with multiple units? I've never owned apartment buildings for one basic reason, and this is probably not a good reason, but when I lived in an apartment in the first time I was there, you know, the first time I was in on my own, I mean, I just counted the days for me to get out of there. And I just didn't want to own a property that anybody there would like make it their goal to get out of there. And that's probably the bad attitude. So, but you've owned apartment buildings and you still might have some. So what's been your experience as far as renting where it's an apartment versus a home?
Well, you put good tenants in there and you're going to be okay, but it is more work. There's just no doubt about it. You have, instead of in a house, you're dealing with one family. In a fourplex, you're dealing with four families, you know, and the interplay between them, you know, where, you know, them getting along. Now, multiple units can be a good investment too, but the small multi-unit market is somewhat limited anymore. They haven't been building that many new fourplex, eightplex, the small buildings. Either the big apartment complexes or houses that are being built. So there's not that much availability on those small units, but you know, I'd still buy the right deal if I found one.
One of the problems with the kind of unit you're talking about, a four unit, let's say, is that there's tons of four units in the area that they're in. So I can think of an area in Riverside, Moreno Valley, and San Bernardino where that has gone really wrong. And it did not matter what I would have done personally, because when the area kind of caved in during a recession, those areas kind of became dangerous looking, and you wouldn't be able to rent that property to a great tenant because it wouldn't be something that would be on their, you know, on their plate. They wouldn't even want the area. That's one of the detriments of owning a, you know, 2 to 4 unit.
Remember, location, that's important. You know, if you're buying in a somewhat rundown area, you're taking a risk. If you're buying in blocks and blocks and blocks of fourplexes, you better make sure that they're being maintained well. But the chances are some of them won't, and they can create problems in your building. Even though you didn't bring the problem in, it could have been brought in by somebody else. I'm not a big fan of being in these big projects of units, and I have some, but I don't. Those were done earlier on. I mean, when I was first starting, but I would generally recommend against staying away from these large areas, you know, of multiple units, because some people don't really keep an eye on their properties and they can fester a lot of issues.
Yeah. As far as an apartment, let's say, have you had a different experience with, say, with a studio versus, let's say, a two bedroom?
Studios are harder to rent, harder to get rent increases. You got a different type of person. They're living basically in one room. I mean, a one bedroom is a little easier. A two bedroom is yet easier than that. You know, now on the contrary, when you get to 3 and 4 bedroom apartments, sometimes you got difficulties there because, you know, you're talking about the number of people that are living in still a somewhat small area. So if I were your investors, I would, whenever possible, if I did buy these, I would be sticking with the 1 and 2 bedrooms.
Any difference between a condo and an apartment?
Condos would be easier. I mean, condos have control, a central control, the homeowners association. So you're not going to have some of the issues you would have on independently owned buildings that are very close together with them. And condos have a lot of similarities to houses. So they tend to be a little more upgraded than apartments. So you maybe get a little bit more rent and maybe be able to get a little bit better quality tenant.
How aggressively do you raise rents if you have somebody that's been in there, say, 3 years and everything's been really good? Is it more important to keep the stability or to maximize the rent?
Both. I mean, you don't want to not raise the rent because you have a good tenant. You're going to end up suffering down the road because every dollar you collect in rent, besides what you need to pay your current expenses, at some point that property is going to come vacant. It's painting, carpeting, whatever it's going to need, the longer they're there, the more the cost will be. So what we try to counsel our owners, and I do myself, is whenever the market is improving, we want to raise the rent every year, but we don't want to have such large increases that we cause the tenants to leave. Most of our rent increases are in the 3 to 5% area.
Okay. What's your feeling about now? This is being maybe I'll ask it on both sides of the fence. Section 8. So, as a property manager, is that have you had experiences with that? And as a property owner, will you consider that?
Yes and no. Yes, I have experience with it. No, we no longer work with Section 8. It's too difficult anymore.
Okay.
I mean, there's just very difficult, time consuming. Now they make you sit at the property all day long. They won't even make an appointment whenever you have a move in. I mean, and sometimes it's a month before they'll do their inspections before they look at the properties. I mean, they become way too bureaucratic, in my opinion. They used to serve a lot more people than they do now, and I think they've become a lot more administrative and a lot less helpful. How's that for an honest answer, Bruce?
No, that's we have friends in the business with rentals, and I'd have to say most of them have decided not to do that. I've had some Section 8 rentals myself, and I've had them work well, and then I've had them work not well. And
my guess is you haven't had any for several years.
I haven't, but that's I guess that's what happens. You have a not good experience. You go, okay, well, it's not necessary. If it is necessary, if using Section 8 becomes like maybe the only way you're going to rent a property, you probably have bought the wrong property.
Well, and remember, the reason I said several years is housing authority serves less and less people all the time. And we hardly ever get a call from anybody on them asking us if we rent it. They have some of their own projects that they own themselves. And I think they want to make sure they stay full. So that's where they try to gear whatever people they have to their projects that they own. I don't see them as a big player in the rental market at any price range.
How proactive are you on, let's say, major maintenance? So you had mentioned to me that it seemed like it was your year to either replace roofs or air conditioning units or that type of thing. So, I mean, most of the properties that you have, do you sort of have a plan in mind where you say, okay, this year I'm going to take care of that, even though it may be not urgent?
Okay. Now, on my properties that I own,
yeah,
as they come vacant, I'm upgrading almost all of them. I mean, I'm putting in a lot of times new cabinetry. I'm putting in ceramic tile, granite countertops. I'm even talking about apartments. It's kind of been a long-term plan that I've had to just upgrade the overall quality of my properties. I mean, they weren't bad, but they might have linoleum on the floor, and the cabinets may be the original cabinets, and they may have some sort of a formica countertop, and maybe they've been rented out so many times, the interior needs to be retextured instead of just painting, which makes them look like they're brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that on a lot of my properties when they come vacant. I don't get vacancies that often right now. So I can tend to afford to upgrade them, and one at a time. I've been doing this for probably the last 7 to 10 years.
The vacancy rate. I mean, you manage a lot of properties. What would if you had to give a percentage for vacants right now? What would it be? Like less than one?
Three vacant rentals in our portfolio. So yeah. Well under 1%.
Yeah, I went to
under a half a 1%.
Yeah, I went to your website and I saw the three properties. I thought, wow, I wonder if that's actually really it. Okay,
that's it. Tell your customers it's a good time to be a landlord. It's a good time to think about buying a property if you can find the right deal, and it's a good time to hold it. And I don't see the future where rents are not going to be going up every year in the next few years, and I don't see a future where real estate prices are not normally going to be heading up upward. We're just not replacing our housing stock or growing our housing stock at the rate we need to do it, so it's going to become more valuable. Whenever they're thinking about buying and flipping, maybe they might want to think about buying and holding on some of them.
Yeah, the clientele that we have, we definitely have people that have, during the downturn especially, so that was when everything was on sale, We had people that were really had a business plan to keep a lot of those. And obviously they have really hit home runs because they were buying the stuff at under 80 grand or something like that. And now it's 250, you know, that's,
only for 20 more of those.
When, you know, I mean, we, in 2008 and nine, we really had the mother of all downturns. And, you've told me on occasion, you just say, I really wish I'd have bought more of them. What was the time frame where you were buying that you bought quite a bit? Did you buy quite a bit in the 90s when we had a downturn?
You know, I started buying in the 80s pretty rapidly.
Okay.
Into the 90s. And then it started slowing down again, and you know, after the say the mid 90s, and then I went back in that the big recession, the one you said everything was 80 grand. You should have given me a few more of those, Bruce, by the way. But I bought maybe 6 properties during the downturn, and since then, I'd say the last property I've purchased was about 2010.
Okay.
I haven't really bought anything in the last 5 or 6 years, and I was just thinking the other day, maybe it's time that I take another look, but I'd like to see, you know, it would have to be still a good deal, obviously.
Yeah, you'd want to see a sale of some kind.
Right.
Going back to the management side, but dealing with the investor that holds that, what percentage of the rentals would you say have financing on them? And would a change in rules of financing, you know, where they could finance a lot more than 4 properties, would that change what they did?
The vast majority of my clients have loans on their property. Some of them have held them long enough they paid off their loans. But the vast majority do, and a lot of them would refinance these loans if they thought they could pull cash out and probably use that cash to go buy another property.
Right. If you had to do this over again, what's interesting, you've looked at my business model and, you know, the hard money loan business and the servicing and stuff, and you have the other side of the coin of that where you have management fees, and yet you're an investor that owns properties. What would you say to somebody that wanted to own a business someday, not just have a few rentals? What advice would you give them in direction to say, you know what, this would be what I would do again, and this is what I would do differently?
Well, so are we talking about the property management business? Is that the question?
Well, in other words, would you replicate that?
If I had to do my life over again, I would have bought more rentals, especially in the Great Recession, obviously. But there were other bad times in the late 70s, early 80s, when interest rates went up to 18, that's when a lot of your owner financing was happening. Prices were depressed then. That was a good time to buy. But yeah, I would actually have bought more. And to people that want to get into real estate, just don't over leverage yourself. Make sure that, you know, you have enough sufficient capital in case some things go wrong. But I'm all for it if they want to try to get in the business of real estate. It's still a great business.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things you said is really true. When we are, as a lender, one of the things that we have to sometimes put the brakes on is somebody that's a great finder. I mean, they can find a lot of stuff, but they don't have the mechanism to exit them as quick as they can find them. And eventually you look at their books and go, you know what? You're kind of done for a while. You need to sell some stuff and retain some liquidity, because that's one of the hardest things in the business, is have some balance.
Right. Yeah. Because the more property you own, the more liquidity you have to have.
That's right. Or yeah, there'll be a day where something goes wrong, and that always goes wrong. I mean, that's the thing. You're going to own a property and you're going to have something you didn't expect. Mike, we're at the end of our time. If you give us your website one more time, please.
O'NeillProperty.net.
Okay. And Mike, thanks for talking to us. And Mike's also my workout partner. And I think he got
a
weighted vest for Christmas, man. And we've been wearing it ever since. And it's been great.
Don't forget to tell him about the 35-pound medicine ball.
That's right. The big medicine ball that kills us every day. All right, Mike, thanks. I'll see you tomorrow at the workout.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.